evening, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Crunch Time, presented by Geppers Liberty Tax in Lawrenceburg and Harrison. See them this tax season. I tell you what, they're offering up a really good deal for you right now, 50% off if you bring in your receipt from last year's tax preparation. So definitely take advantage of that if you haven't already gotten your taxes done. See our friends at Geppers Liberty Tax in Lawrenceburg and Harrison. I'm Double T, Travis there alongside John Blackwell. Crunch Time runs every Monday, 6 to 6:30, and we are getting down towards the end of the Crunch Time season, I would say, with high school sports, winter season kind of coming to an end or getting close to coming to an end. Of course, we'll have college basketball. That's almost over. And then we get into really just baseball and soccer season. So we'll probably take a little bit of a sabbatical at some point and come back this fall with some high school football and soccer and all that good stuff. But plenty still going on right now as we speak. John, one of the big things was the Coaches versus Cancer fundraiser that happened at Lawrenceburg over the past month or so. And we got the culmination of all that on Friday night with a fun atmosphere at Lawrenceburg High School.
It was terrific. And, you know, obviously being one of the many people behind that, I want to use this platform here to thank a lot of people. First of all, a lot of people just donating. You know, the GoFundMe for Coach Reinhardt and I to wear those suits. Go ahead. This is a radio broadcast.
They're looking good.
But go ahead, Travis, and try to do those justice.
Bright orange for Mr. John Blackwell here, and then bright red for Coach Kevin Reinhardt. And I thought you guys, you look great out there.
Well, mine was not tiger orange. Mine was bright orange. A lot of people asked me if I was going to go direct traffic after the game. But, you know, we did it on a budget. Those suits cost $38 each on Amazon. So, you know, we wanted to keep it cheap on our end. But, no, just a lot of people pitching in, you know, just businesses around Ohio Valley. They didn't make a dollar. They got some free advertising out of the deal. All the t-shirts have OVS on the back.
Right.
They donated all the profit from the t-shirt sales. JTM donated the food for the dinner that we had before the game. Tiger Pizzazz performed. They're awesome. As always, our student council, led by Miss Carmen Lusk, you know, had their hands in everything. And then obviously it took a lot of people, you know, buying the t-shirts, coming to the dinner, coming to the game, pitching in on the GoFundMe. The alumni game the night before, you know, was terrific. It was pretty well attended, I thought, for
too.
We didn't have any expenses. We didn't have to pay for our own gym. The refs volunteered. The clock keeper volunteered. It was a good game. The alumni game was a good game. And so it was just a lot of fun. And I appreciate, you know, Lawrenceburg and South Dearborn's administration and Coach Reinhardt being on board with doing that. And I think, you know, just today, after we totaled up all the initiatives, Travis, Nicole and I, my wife Nicole and I, threw just another small donation on the top to bump it up over 15,000.
Very nice.
It was in the 14.9s, and Nicole and I threw what was necessary to get it up over 15,000, and then I think we're going to make that final donation check is going to end up being exactly $15,000, $15,022.22.
Oh, very nice.
So, you know, I told Nicole, hey, let's make this 15,000, and then I said, nope, let's make it 15,022 and 22 cents in honor of Lauren Hill, who's an inspiration to so many. And it was a lot of fun, and I appreciate you guys at Eagle here as well for promoting it the way you did.
I got to give some kudos to Happy Jack here at Eagle Country, because he had been saying here internally that he thought the fundraising total would get over 15,000, so he set the over-under, and glad that we got over, because that's just fantastic. But I had a lot of fun being a part of the alumni game, and then, of course, myself and Coach Caniga called the boys' varsity contest on Friday. The atmosphere was fantastic. Coach kind of left me hanging there in the third quarter. I did the whole third quarter by myself, but it was such a fun game. And your Tigers actually shot the lights out. They went out the next night.
Yeah, well, we needed to save some of those threes for Saturday night.
Sure.
Connersville's a different beast. But no, we played really, really well on Friday, and we shot really, really well. You know, there's nights in basketball, you know, Travis, you've played, you've watched. Sometimes you don't play real well, and you shoot well, and that can kind of mask not playing well. Sometimes you play pretty well, and you just can't make a shot. And on Friday night, you know, we played relatively well and shot lights out. I mean, Garrett and Gavin Yoon combined to go 10 for 11 behind the three-point line. And as good as those two are, and no coach counts for two guys going 10 for 11.
No.
It doesn't matter how good your guys are. But, no, we played a really, really good game. Thought we defended them a little bit better than we did in the Rivertown, even though they ended up with the same points on the board. Of course, they got hotter than a firecracker in the third quarter themselves. But no, I was pleased with our effort, and I wish we could have saved a couple of those three balls back for Connersville, because the next night we dug an early hole and bounced back a little bit, but kind of got Connersville. But we'll talk more about them, I'm sure, when we get into the sectional. But Friday night was a good night for the Tigers to, on top of everything that went into it from both communities, for us to get that win was a lot of fun. And now I told my players, I was like, I can at least keep that silly suit. I said, I can't lose to South Dearborn and then have that suit hanging out of my closet. As much fun as the Coaches versus Cancer initiative was, I don't want to look at that suit if the only game I ever coached in it we lost. So
That's a good point.
I can keep the suit. But we're pretty proud of it, Travis. We were told that the biggest Coaches versus Cancer check from a high school basketball game ever in Indiana was $9,600. And with the support of our communities and the local businesses, we were able to blow that out of the water. Now, interestingly enough, the same people told me that the biggest Coaches versus Cancer check actually came from a baseball game at Bedford North Lawrence. So I would love to talk to the folks there to see
what the number is.
What kind of stuff they did.
Because you can't get
a number like that just by passing donation buckets around in the crowd, which the donation buckets in the crowd on Friday night, I think, ended up being over 1,100. But it was real, real neat. And like you said, it was a real good environment, so I appreciate everybody's support of that.
Yeah, now, if you didn't hear the game, see the game on Friday, South Dearborn actually played pretty good, too. Lawrenceburg was just, could not miss a shot, it seemed like. But a lot of fun to call that game and be a part of, a little part of all the festivities that went on. So we will kind of circle back around and touch on some more high school hoops as the show rolls on. It is Crunch Time presented by Geppers Liberty Tax in Lawrenceburg and Harrison. And we'll get into a couple more topics, and then we'll swing back around to high school hoops. I do want to touch on one thing in football. Of course, the NFL Combine going on in Indianapolis, as it has for many, many years. And say what you will about that particular event. I don't know how much it does in terms of finding star players. I think the tape and what they've done on the field should kind of dictate that. But regardless, there's going to be a lot of storylines that come out of the NFL Combine. There's already one surrounding the Cincinnati Bengals and perhaps taking Joe Burrow with that number one pick. But it seems to me, John, a lot of folks in the media may be trying to persuade Joe Burrow to force his way out of playing in Cincinnati.
Yeah, you hate to hear that, read that, listen to that. And what's the precedent? Is Eli Manning the precedent?
And even John Elway before
John
then.
Elway going way back. Mm-hmm. And the one media, major media personality that I heard swing from the other side and go to bat for the Bengals was Mel Kiper. They said the Bengals, even though it's 30 years removed, they've been to two Super Bowls. They've had playoff eras with their last three quarterbacks. Boomer Esiason, not exclusively the last three quarterbacks. As we all know, the Bengals had a hodgepodge in there in between.
Yeah, but Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton.
The Boomer Esiason era, the Carson Palmer era, the Andy Dalton era, they've shown the ability to get to the playoffs. And Mel Kiper kind of went to bat for the Bengals like, hey, it's easy to kick them while they're down now. But just 4 or 5 years ago, this was one of the only teams that had been in the playoffs 5 years in a row, maybe?
Yeah, and I actually saw a stat that they've made the playoffs more times than any other team that's picking in the top 10 historically.
Okay. So, I'm not surprised by that, because here we are in Bengals country, surrounded by Bengals fans. I'm a Colts fan first, so it's easy to kick them while they're down. But, it's not like, there's going to be 10 to 15 franchises out there that don't exactly have this deep, long tradition of deep playoff runs and Super Bowls either. So, I don't like to see it, whatsoever. And I'm interested in how it plays out. And I don't know the business of sports that well. I heard a phrase that says Joe Burrow says he has leverage. That's the part that I cringed at. Let the media be the media. But when I read that line from Joe Burrow, that's what made me cringe.
Joe could easily stop all this by saying that he would love to play for the Bengals, or he's expecting to be the number one pick, so he's going to Cincinnati. He could end it very quickly with maybe some of these interviews he's going to have at the Combine. He has not actually said anything publicly about going to the Bengals, but that's going to be the pick, and then we'll see how it works its way out from there. I think the asking price is going to be way too high for any other team to actually realistically jump up to that number one spot, because the Bengals are going to be asking for a king's ransom. But Joe Burrow's a guy guy I think that can definitely get the Bengals going in the right direction. And with some of their playmakers on offense, if you can bring A.J. Green back, Tyler Boyd's had a couple nice seasons in a row, Joe Mixon, one of the better running backs in the league. So there's some talent on that offensive side of the ball where you could think they could be halfway decent if Joe Burrow's as good a quarterback as everyone thinks he's going to be. So that's kind of where I stand with it.
There is. He's going to be the pick. And you know what? The football purist and the hardcore football side of this, you don't want to say this out loud. The other thing the Bengals have to do is sell tickets. I mean, there's a business component to this. You know what I mean? And Joe Burrow with a healthy A.J. Green, and you and I know football enough to know that you're not going to magically go 12-4 because you get a new quarterback. But there's a business side of this for the Bengals as well. I mean, we saw how sparse the crowds got last year. So Joe Burrow's going to be the pick. Where's Andy Dalton fit into this? Do you obviously you don't know, but have you read, heard, or have a prediction on what his fate is?
I see some rumors online. I've seen a couple teams pop up, like the Chicago Bears, maybe even the Patriots if they moved on from Brady. There's a lot of outlandish stuff out there. He could be released, and they're not going to have to be. They're not going to have to pay that salary because he's into last year's contract. So there's a clause in there where they can release him free of charge, basically. But I think they could benefit from trading him to
that's what I would think too. Don't you agree with me that he is hands down, despite what Bengals fans, you know, wanted to drag him through last year, he's hands down one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to make a case for him to be in the top 10, but he's probably in the top 20 or 24. I mean, he's still starting quarterback material.
For sure, and there's a team somewhere in the middle of the pack that maybe doesn't have a really, really solid option at quarterback, and he can definitely win some games if he's surrounded with the right pieces. So it's not like he's a terrible quarterback. It's just he's been in some terrible situations.
Send him 100 miles west up I-74. I mean, you know, not that I'm totally abandoning the Jacoby Brissett train, but it sounds like the Colts are.
But wouldn't it be something to see, like, Andy Dalton could be to the Colts what Ryan Tannehill just was to the Tennessee Titans?
I could see that 100%. Because the Colts, I think we'd all agree, the Colts have a better constructed roster than the Bengals right now. I think if you would look at that objectively, if they both stay healthy.
And based on their records from last season.
Right, exactly. So there's a place for Andy Dalton, and I don't disagree it's time for the Bengals to move on, but Andy Dalton didn't do anything wrong. He's first class, and he's one of the you know, 20 to 25 best quarterbacks in the NFL in my eyes, so I'd love to see him playing somewhere.
I'm right there with you, and he's going to get his opportunity somewhere. It's just not going to be in Cincinnati, and it doesn't make sense to have him on the roster if you're drafting Joe Burrow number one. So that'll kind of do it on our NFL talk here tonight. We wanted to get into some college hoops a little bit, too. We haven't touched on this hardly at all this basketball season.
But we will. March is right around the corner.
Absolutely. So it's time to just kind of preview it for a couple minutes. There's no sense in really talking too much about who the best teams are early on in the season because there's so much that goes on throughout the course of the season. We've seen them fluctuate. I mean, I look at my favorite team. Once upon a time, I considered Ohio State the best team in the nation very early on in the season. Their resume even said so. They had beaten teams like Villanova, North Carolina before they really fell off, and then Kentucky. So, like, they had some really good wins and were up there and then completely went off the tracks and lost about seven games in a row. So there's been a lot of movement in college basketball, but I think there's a lot of parity there. I don't know that you can point at one or two teams and say they're definitely going to be in the Final Four.
Well, here's what I'm excited about. First of all, your point about Ohio State is it's a case for I wish that polls didn't come out in football until mid-October.
Yes.
And in basketball, Christmas, early January, just because of all the topsy-turviness. But, yeah, your point about the parity, here's what's – if you do just want to look at the straight rankings, Travis, what's exciting, one of the many things that's exciting is the top 10, the top 15 just in the polls right now, it's not the who's who. It's not the total blue bloods. Yes, you got Kansas playing as well as anybody. Kentucky, even though you talk to Kentucky fans and you think they're going through the worst season in the history of basketball,
yeah,
they're 22-5, and they're going to win the SEC. Duke is obviously still a player. But I'm talking about teams like Gonzaga, who sniffed it. Baylor, okay, they just got beat. They're up there.
Yeah.
You've got San Diego State and Dayton. Some of these mid-majors, some of these, like, show me in March type teams that have never really been there. And I think that makes for exciting stuff.
Yeah, I love seeing Dayton up there in the top 10. I'm really excited to see what they do on the national stage because they are looking at a high seed in the NCAA tournament. And what they do with it is, going to show you what their season
is. And then even teams like Florida State, Seton Hall, Oregon, those teams and programs are no strangers to success, but they're also the programs that have never gone deep, gone the distance, and they have the makeup of teams that can. Like Florida State, I have liked Florida State, it seems like, 7 or 8 out of the past 10 years. I've just really liked their team, their athleticism. I think Leonard Hamilton's very underrated. There they are again. So it's
play Louisville tonight at home too.
Yeah,
so
that's a big game. That's a big game. So it's you know, it's a cliche, but it is wide open. I mean, right now Kansas is probably, you know,
they're in
the most consistent team up top, but consistent's the word. They're not blowing you away and you know, a lock to do anything.
It's going to be tough to fill out your brackets, and you're going to get a chance to do that at EagleCountryOnline.com if you've been playing along with College Basketball Pick'em. You know, you sign up for free and you got a chance to win a lot of great prizes, but we're actually going to be having a bracket challenge on our website as well, so everyone has something to look forward to. But we talked about this off the air before we got started, talking about some of the teams that are on the bubble that actually have some local, regional interests.
Well, let's get a little more local with our talk here. A friend of mine, and I'll give him credit, not hide behind the phrase, a friend of mine, Andy Bondistel, mm-hmm. He'll probably hit this podcast, told me this morning, this is crazy, I've never heard anything like this, okay. It is mathematically possible to have a 10-way tie for first place in the Big Ten.
I believe it.
Terribly unlikely, okay, sure. But at this point, it is still mathematically possible for 10 teams to finish 12-8. So when you talk parity, the Big Ten is a microcosm of that parity with everything that's going on there. Now, the Indiana Hoosiers, you know, you talk about, and I guess that's normal for any major fan base, you talk about, the Hoosiers are back and they're rolling, oh, the mm-hmm. Hoosier season's done, fire Archie Miller. I mean, I get exhausted with it. But they're definitely trending upwards.
Yeah, a huge win over Penn State.
Huge win, and it came on the heels of a road win at Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Minnesota, which they rarely play good at the barn.
Right. Minnesota, not exactly they're 12-13, but it's still a road win in the Big Ten and a tough place to play. So they're trending upwards. I know they've got a big one with Purdue this Thursday. That would be a big road win, and Hoosier fans know they need to flush that sour taste of the big Bob Knight celebration, which was a great day for IU basketball. But, yes, side note, Purdue dismantled them in Assembly Hall. So they've got Purdue Thursday. So the Hoosiers are trending upwards. Notre Dame, an in-state school, my alma mater, quietly trending upwards in an ACC that, after Duke, Florida State, and Louisville, the ACC is
not as strong as it has been.
Right. So, and right now Notre Dame's benefiting from that because Notre Dame a month ago was you know, taken for dead in the ACC, and now I think they're back to 500 in the ACC, maybe 8-8, and definitely, you know, Coach Bray's phrase was that we're squinting at that NCAA tournament bracket, you know, because the ACC is not near as deep after Florida State, Louisville, and Duke.
And a big thing for Notre Dame is obviously they got a chance to win a couple more conference games as the regular season ends, but they could also help themselves by making a little bit of a run in that postseason tournament, ACC tournament.
And that could be one where, depending on how you match up, because there's such balance, there's three dominant or upper-tier teams in Duke, Florida State, and Louisville. Two of them are getting ready to tip off here in 30 minutes. But, yeah, you know, Notre Dame's a team that could win a couple, and they're really fun to watch too. I'm a little biased, but they've got a walking double-double in John Mooney up there and things like that. But, you know, the Hoosiers, and then locally here, Cincinnati and Xavier, hard to picture, you know, those two punching their ticket here soon, but it's hard to picture either one of them going away. I mean, those two teams are going to be flirting with the bubble.
You look at UC, you know, playing in the AAC, you don't know how many teams that particular conference is going to get. They've played pretty well here as of late, but maybe no real marquee wins in the non-conference.
Exactly, because I think right now they're tied for first in the conference race, 11-4 with mm-hmm. Houston. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati got a real nice win yesterday against Wichita State. Cincinnati has, like, how many games have gone to overtime?
Too many to count at this point, yeah.
And
they do play Houston again this week. So
that's a big game because, like you said, they're in first place in the AAC. I know that's not a Power 5, but you would think that if you can just win the AAC regular season, that should be enough. But UC's lack of marquee non-conference win, I don't think they played that many quality non-conference games, and I know they did play Ohio State, lost.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm looking at their schedule right now. If they can beat Houston, then they close out regular season play with South Florida and Temple. I think if they can win two of the three, I think that they'll feel pretty good going in their conference tournament.
The problem is if somebody out of the ordinary wins their conference tournament, then it affects other teams like an Indiana or a Notre Dame that play in a Power 5 conference that have a little bit, you know, they're right there on the bubble as well. So you want to see as few teams that aren't supposed to win their conference tournaments that are non-Power 5 conferences win so that those teams can actually go through as an at-large.
Which, to your point, Travis, in that conference, that's the classic bid-stealer conference because the American doesn't have that many automatic locks, you know what I mean? So that is the classic conference tournament. Even Memphis, I mean, once upon a time, well, you talk about preseason rankings. Well, yes. Memphis had top five numbers next to their head, and now they're fighting for the bubble themselves at 19-8, 8-6 overall. But, you know, just a few miles from UC, then you got Xavier. Now, Xavier, kind of an opposite scenario of Cincinnati. They will benefit from playing in what I think is a really, really good conference.
Yes.
I think the Big Ten's the best conference in the country.
Has to be.
Has to be. But I think when you start talking about second, I don't think people should overlook the Big East. For starters, there's significantly less teams in the Big East, so there's less bottom feeders. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, DePaul's and St. John's aren't exactly great, but it's only a 10-team league. And right now, Xavier's 6-8 in the Big East. So, you know, with four games to go, hopefully they can get 9-9 in conference play. They've got DePaul, Georgetown, Providence, and Butler. So they're 6-8.
They should win two of those games.
Right, and they're done with Seton Hall. They're done with Seton Hall. They're done with Creighton. They're done with Marquette. There's no easy games in the Big East, but they're 6-8. DePaul, Georgetown, Providence, and Butler. And now Butler's dealing with an injured Kamar Baldwin. I'm not sure how injured he is. So Xavier,
they're in position
They're in position to help themselves, right? And I hope they do. I know Travis Steele, I know they haven't maintained the success, but Chris Mack also left, you know, a roster that didn't have the firepower that he had. I'd love to see Coach Steele get them in the here in his second year.
Yeah, so the moral of the bubble talk story is there's going to be a lot of good, meaningful college basketball games over the next couple of weeks leading up to Selection Sunday. Well, actually, we even got the conference tournaments before we get there. So lots of good college basketball to be played here over the next couple of weeks. Let's circle back to high school sports. I know we're kind of all over the place here, but hey, it's our show. We can do whatever we want.
And we only get 30 minutes a week.
Exactly. So we'll hop around, talk about a lot of different topics. We do want to congratulate those three young men that competed at the wrestling state championship over the weekend. Andrew Roth and Cole Veal were two of them. They did get defeated there in the first round, but still a great accomplishment to get all the way to Bankers Life Fieldhouse. But Briar Hall was moments away from becoming state champion and just lost it there in the final seconds of that championship round. The runner-up, I believe, at 152 pounds, if my memory is not you know, deceiving me a little bit, but man, three wrestlers going to state and they all showed out pretty well.
Seems like it happens, you know, close to every year in Southeast Indiana now. I mean, Mason Paris got all the attention that he deserved, but I think Lawrenceburg and Southeast Indiana in general have shown that, you know, there's some quality wrestling going on down here, and not just, you know, Mason is a
he kind of put this area
in his own league, mm-hmm. but there's lots of quality wrestling going on down here. So proud and happy for all those guys.
Absolutely. And if you haven't been watching Mason Paris, sophomore at the University of Michigan, he's absolutely been on fire this year. Number two ranked heavyweight in the college ranks. So he's got his sights set on a national championship. Hopefully he can make a pretty good run there in the NCAA tournament. And we need to get on to the boys basketball sectional draw, as this is a time of year that we love here in Eagle Country, because there's nothing better than tournament basketball, and especially at the high school level, a lot of good teams here in the area, and some intriguing matchups in the sectional. So we're going to start in 4A, Columbus North, and this is the sectional that the East Central Trojans will play in, and they got themselves a favorable first-round draw. Martinsville only 1-20 on the year. No disrespect to their program, but East Central should go through that first round and find themselves with a matchup against Bloomington North. This is also a good draw for East Central because they stayed away from the number one team in all of Class 4A. That is the undefeated Bloomington South. So what'd you think of East Central's draw in this Columbus North sectional?
Well, like you said, no No disrespect to Martinsville at all, and they're a 4A, so a 1-20 4A team is going to be better than a lot of 500 teams in other leagues. But, yeah, I mean, if you're Essential and you don't get one of those buys, you know, you've got a chance to win that first one. But that sectional is just it's a gauntlet, Travis. I mean, I know what Martinsville's record is, but Bloomington South, number one, have been all year. Bloomington North, Columbus North, East Central, terrific. Columbus East, I saw them on film a couple times this year. They're a little bit down by their standards, but I mean, there's four good teams, including the best in the state right there. So hopefully the Trojans will punch through and have a get their swing at one of those Bloomington schools. But I tell you, I'm not going to count the Trojans out against anybody. I don't care what the rankings or records are. East Central is a unique matchup for anybody that plays them, regardless of what your team is. With Collinsworth inside and Becker's such a tough matchup, and they can shoot the ball. You know, like in years past, East Central, you know, maybe if they had a weakness, it was shooting from the outside. But this year, you know, that's not the case with Rohrbacher and Messmore, and they're a
four-headed monster. I like to call them out there at East Central. And Coach Disbro always does a good job with his teams. They don't take a lot of bad shots, and that's why I like how they work their offense. So it is going to be a tough sectional for them. They have played Columbus North. They lost to them 77-54. They're on the opposite side of the bracket, as is Columbus East, who they did defeat earlier in the season by double digits. But those Bloomington teams and Martinsville East Central hasn't seen this year. So we'll see how it shakes out. I would expect them to win that first game, but anything's possible now that we get into tournament play. And it looks like the road goes through the Bloomington teams in that Columbus North sectional. So move on to 3A Connersville sectional. A change, finally. I don't know if it's the change everybody wanted, but Greensburg has hosted this sectional for several years. And Connersville just jumping into this sectional as Madison goes elsewhere. So this is a really intriguing sectional because it's just all EIAC teams. Everybody's familiar with one another. Your Tigers?
Oh, we got a great draw, didn't we? I mean, we got a great draw, didn't we? Let's play a true road game at Connersville and have a well-rested Greensburg team waiting on the winner. But look, this sectional is a gauntlet. You know, obviously, you know, just whether you want to look at the Sagarin ratings or records or whatever, you know, we're up there on the top half with it with the two best teams. But look, come on, Batesville's playing as well as anybody right now. And, you know, South Dearborn can beat anybody. Franklin County's the most improved team in the area. But no, we got a tough draw, but there's not going to be an easy draw in that sectional. We just played Connersville Saturday, so, you know, super familiar. Some of the teams you play in December, it's such a long season. When you draw them in the sectional, it feels like you're starting over. But, you know, we'll have our work cut out for us. Coach Brown and that pack line defense are really, really good. They hold pretty much everybody they play under their average. They did the same to us. We'll have to have a much more specific offensive game plan, which we will. And you know how it goes, Travis. We'll have a little more time to prepare as opposed to the quick turnaround playing them on a Saturday. Now, that works both ways because Connersville played Friday night, too, and played us on a Saturday. So it works both ways.
But it's not like they blew the doors off of you. It was a close game. We're expecting another close one here.
We feel like that it's a game we can win, but we know that we're going to have to play really, really well. And you know, I think Coach Brown would say the same thing. So.
Yeah, no, we're here selfishly hoping for a Lawrenceburg and South Dearborn win in the first round so that we can bring you a doubleheader in that semifinal come Friday, March 6th. But a real competitive sectional there at Connersville. Another really competitive sectional, this is going to be held at North Decatur. This features the Milan Indians, South Ripley, two of the teams that we like to keep our eyes on. It also features the number 6 team in 2A, South Decatur. They've been awesome this year, scoring a lot of points.
Yeah, and South Decatur, South Ripley, that's look, anybody can win this sectional. Triton Central, I don't know anything about Triton Central. I know they lost a lot of talent from last year, and I know their record's a little down. But I've seen my share, even though we don't play them. I've seen them on film preparing for other teams. South Decatur, South Ripley, Milan, North Decatur. Anybody can win that thing. I know South Decatur's the favorite, but I also know that teams are more likely to tempo you a little bit. I don't want to say prepare harder. That implies coaches don't prepare hard during the regular season, but, you know, do things a little bit differently. You know, there might be an element to some of these teams that have beat South Decatur, that South Decatur's beat in the regular season, that their coaches can tell the kids, hey, we already played these guys once, and they beat us by 15 or 18. We got to do something different. And it's a lot easier to get kids on board after, you know what I mean? They've lost to a team, so don't call that puppy the South Decatur Invitational.
Yeah, and South Decatur has been – beating a lot of teams badly, but not the teams in the sectional.
Correct.
Milan and South Ripley both lost to South Decatur by 1 point.
Well, and North Decatur was three because I was at that game scouting North Decatur. And the game, the sectional's at North Decatur. Coach Nobby, his team's improved as much as anybody's. Milan, as we all know, you know, Milan's wins show how well they're playing. Milan was never that bad. They might have started 1-5, okay? I know they were beating us after three quarters. We were able to beat them. A couple of those other early season losses were just a possession here or there. So the wins have gone their way, but Milan's been a good team all year. I think they're 14-9 now. They're awfully close to about 19-4, to be honest with
this
you.
This might be one of the most competitive sectionals in all of the state of Indiana. Another 2A sectional that we'll have our eyes on features the Switzerland County Pacers. They did get a bye. They'll await the winner of Providence and Austin. Providence, one of the better teams, at least record wise in this Southwestern Hanover sectional. And speaking of Southwestern Hanover, of course, they're going through a little something with their coach stepping down, Jerry Baumholt, but still the number 15 team in all of 2A. Foster Mefford, one of the best players you'll see here in Southeast Indiana. But they drew a pretty tough Clarksville team, so that's an intriguing sectional as well. But Switzerland County only got to win one game to get themselves into a championship situation. And then in 1A at Southwestern Shelbyville, we'll have our eyes on this in terms of watching what Rising Sun, Jacksonville, and Oldenburg do. Rising Sun got the bye at the top of the bracket. They'll await Morristown or Waldron. Morristown, one of the favorites here. Jacksonville drew Southwestern Shelbyville, and then Oldenburg, who's having a fantastic season. You guys are going to see them coming up this week. They take on Hauser.
Yep, Morristown and Oldenburg, the favorites there just by the numbers, and I've seen most of those teams on film, and I guess they wouldn't meet in the championship. They would meet on Friday night, correct?
Oldenburg and Morristown are on the opposite side of the bracket.
So that would be a championship.
Yes, it would be. Yep.
I'd be surprised if that wasn't the championship. Although Jacksonville is talented as well, so.
So there you have it. Those are the sectional pairings for at least the local interest here. And we're going to be trying to call as many of these games as we possibly can. Still haven't finalized any plans, but we will keep you tuned on where we'll be when sectional play starts next week. In terms of high school basketball broadcast this week, East Central at Greensburg. It is the EIAC championship game. If Greensburg wins, they win it outright. East Central wins, the two teams share. Any thoughts on these two teams as they're going to do battle on our airwaves this Friday?
Well, I think it's going to be a battle. I'm going to go Kirk Herbstreit here. I'm not calling the game, but I'm not going to pick it because of how much respect I have for both teams, and I don't want to give anybody any bulletin board material to get thrown back in my face, but it's definitely contrasting styles. Greensburg's want to get up and down a little bit. Greensburg's want to get more field goal attempts on that stat sheet, and East Central's going to just grind you out and play inside out and take good shots. Although I say that, this East Central team's gotten up and down more and pressed more and extended their defense more than East Central teams, at least in recent memory, and they're pretty much doing that against everybody. So I'd be interested, and I probably will end up watching the game on film just because, you know, there's a chance we see Greensburg. I'll be interested to see how Coach Disbro approaches Greensburg because he's done a real, real good job of playing multiple defenses and keeping teams on their heels this year. Whereas Greensburg, you know what you're going to get. They're going to run their 4-out-1 in motion. They're going to play your man. They're going to play through Wellage. And I'd be surprised if this game wasn't in the balance with 4 minutes to go. How's that for a Kirk Herbstreit analysis?
Yeah, that's a great analysis, and it should be a great game right here on Eagle Country 99.3 coming up this Friday. I will say this, if the game can be played somewhere in the 50s, that's probably the best chance for the Trojans to walk away with a share of the EIAC crown. But one way or another, you're going to hear it right here. And Mike Perleberg, Chuck Thomas going to be on the call. Should be a good one. 7:10 pregame on Friday, 7:30 tip of that varsity contest. And with that, that's going to do it for tonight. JB, thanks for stopping in, talking some hoops with me. And we certainly wish your Tigers the best of luck the rest of the regular season and into sectional play.
Appreciate that, Travis. I will not be here a week from tonight, but should be here with you most of the rest of the spring after that. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate everybody listening and supporting high school hoops all year. And get out to a sectional or tune it in right here on Eagle or a combination of the two.
Yep, and we hope to see you next weekend at Connersville, if you catch my drift.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope so. I hope the next time I see you is next weekend at Connersville doing a pregame interview.
That would be fantastic, and thanks to everybody out there in Eagle Country for tuning in to Crunch Time tonight. You can catch the show every Monday evening, 6 to 6:30, right here on your hometown radio station. All the prior podcasts, we also get you linked up over at EagleCountryOnline.com, and be sure to get out and see our great sponsor, Geppers Liberty Tax, in Lawrenceburg and Harrison. So long and good night.